When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to the Billboard Pop Shop Podcast. I'm Keith Caulfield, Senior Director of Charts at Billboard.
And I'm Katie Atkinson, Billboard's Executive Digital Director, West Coast.
As always, the Billboard Pop Shop Podcast is your one-stop shop for all things pop on Billboard's weekly charts. In addition, you can always count on a lively discussion about the latest pop news, fun chart stats and stories, new music, and guest interviews with music stars and folks from the world of pop. Today on the show, we've got chart news on how Taylor Swift reigns supreme on both the Billboard 200 and Hot 100 yet again with Midnights and Antihero. How David Guetta and Bebe Rexha hit the top 10 on the Hot 100 with I'm Good Blue. How Louis Tomlinson scores his highest charting album yet on the Billboard 200 with the top 5 debut of Faith in the Future. And how Bruce Springsteen and Nas rack up their latest top 10s on the Billboard 200.
Plus, Keith and I had quite the weekend, and I truly can't overstate this. It began Friday with us being two of the lucky humans in the room for Adele's opening night of her Las Vegas residency. Still can't quite believe that. But then we decided to come back to Los Angeles and go to Dodger Stadium on Saturday night and also see Elton John's second-to-last North American tour show.
Because we don't do anything halfway.
Or sleep.
Apparently.
So we're just going to take you all through this magical weekend if you stick around in just a little bit. But first, before we get started, if you enjoy the podcast, subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast provider so you won't miss an episode. And if you want to explore more podcasts from Billboard, visit billboard.com/podcasts.
Okay, let's do the chart chat. First up, Taylor Swift returns to number one on the Billboard 200 as Midnights climbs 2-1, notching its third non-consecutive week atop the list. A week ago, it stepped aside for the number one arrival of Drake and 21 Savage's Her Loss, which falls to number two this week. Midnights earned 204,000 equivalent album units.
That's it.
That's it. In the U.S. in the week ending November 17th, according to Luminate. Notably, Midnights is the first album to earn at least 200,000 units in each of its first 4 weeks of release since Adele's 25 saw its first 6 weeks reach the 200,000-plus threshold back in late 2015 and early 2016. Staying with the Billboard 200, Louis Tomlinson lands his highest charting album yet with the number 5 debut of Faith in the Future. Bruce Springsteen achieves his 22nd top 10 charting effort with the number 8 arrival of Only the Strong Survive. It's an R&B soul covers album. And Nas captures his 16th top 10 with King's Disease 3 as it starts at number 10. Notably for Nas, he now ties Jay-Z as having the most top 10 albums on the Billboard 200 among rappers or rap acts,
I suppose. They were in a former feud, but now they're good.
Former feuds, and look at that, two of the most successful rappers of all time on the Billboard 200.
Yep.
Lastly, on the Billboard Hot 100 Songs chart, Antihero clocks a fourth week atop the list, while David Guetta and friend of the podcast Bebe Rexha's I'm Good Blue hits the top 10 for the first time. Climbs 20-7. Its rush up the list this week is owed to basically having the chart clear out of the logjam of new Taylor Swift and Drake 21 Savage album cuts that were clogging up the upper portion of the list for the past 2 weeks.
I'm happy that it ended up getting that
Before Christmas took over.
Exactly. We honestly didn't know if it was going to make it back up this high. So that's great. It's amazing.
The track interpolates Eiffel 65's Blue Da Ba Dee, which hit number 6 on the Hot 100 in 2000. And this is Guetta's first top 10 since Hey Mama, which actually features Rexha, Nicki Minaj, and Afrojack, hit number 8 in 2015. And this is actually David Guetta's highest charting song since Without You, featuring Usher, reached number 4 in 2011. And for BB, it's her first top 10 since Meant to Be, with Florida Georgia Line reached number 2 in 2018. Just a fun story all around for this song to find the success that it's found.
It's nice. And BB performed it at the American Music Awards on Sunday night. Sans Getta.
Oh.
Yep. Well. Just BB. She looked great.
She looked great.
As I was watching the performance, I said, this could have been 2022 or it could have been 1998. Like, it literally is just kind of, you know, you don't know where this song came from because of the interpolation. Okay. So, Keith.
The meat of the matter.
Keith. Oh, man. Adele kicked off her residency in Las Vegas this past weekend. Weekends with Adele. Nights 1 and 2 were on Friday and Saturday night. And Keith and I were in the crowd. Like
in different spaces in the crowd.
Yeah.
Katie was on the floor, a little bit closer. I was in the uppermost balcony in the middle. So we have different views, different aspects of the show.
And if you have been following Billboard.com or Billboard's socials at all, you've seen some of the coverage of it. I reviewed the show by doing the best moments from it. I wrote up the best one-liners and best banter from the show, which Adele is famous for, of course. We have a gallery of photos from the show. On our socials, we have two different Instagram reels of two different songs from the show. And we just tried to cover every last minute of it because, you know, 4,000 people were in this room. That's it.
That's
out of
it.
The entire world. And I actually feel like looking at the coverage of it, her home country of England was probably the most interested in what the hell was going on in Las Vegas because, you know, she hasn't performed or done a tour since the album 25 and has done nothing tour-wise for 30. This is it. This is the show.
Yeah, she did. Well, she did the Hyde Park show.
Yes, that's right. She did do Hyde Park.
In London.
And of course, the like one night only, you know, TV special as well.
Right.
But I can't overstate how great this was. I mean, I think I won't speak for Keith. I'll let Keith speak for himself. But I was stunned by the just production value of the whole thing, how every single song, it was clear like somebody had thought of every little touch they could add to it to make it just like this overwhelmingly magical, you know, experience. Because we all know Adele has an incredible voice and, you know, singing live, she sounds even more magical than her recordings. But I don't know what I expected or I didn't know what to expect from kind of a small room theater show from her. And it turned out the way she used these video screens that went across the entirety of the theater just blew me away entirely. I thought it was magical.
Yeah, she opens, spoiler alert, if you've read the story, she opens with Hello. And
spoiler alert for history, that's what she's going to open her shows with, but continue.
when you enter the venue and it's at the Coliseum at Caesar's Palace, Caesar's Palace is a beautiful hotel. It's very elegant, luxurious, rich, and the Coliseum mirrors that.
Yeah.
You know, it's a beautiful venue that everyone from Elton John to Celine Dion to Bette Midler to Cher to Madonna have all played in the past.
To Garth Brooks next year.
To Garth Brooks. So it's a beautiful venue. It is large but intimate, small but big.
Yep.
It's kind of all those things where, you know, though Adele kind of joked in the show about how there were a couple kind of bum seats in the rafters, I think generally you're going to have a pretty good view no matter where you're at.
Yeah.
Granted, you know, if you're in the upper deck, you're still going to be kind of far away, but she creatively used the venue to make you feel like you were a little bit closer.
Yeah.
So she used lots of projection screens, and you know, I was kind of actually afraid. Sorry, let me just back up. When Hello started, it's a very kind of intimate moment where Adele just comes out into the middle of the stage and just starts singing. But it's
her and a piano.
Her and a piano and a pianist. But the way the stage is set up, it's like, okay, this feels very intimate. Like it's almost like a one-woman show and she's this one small individual in the middle of an enormous stage. Just it's a huge stage. But when the chorus kicked in, projection screens come on and Adele is like, you know, four stories high.
Floor to ceiling.
And it immediately I was like, oh, thank God. Like now I feel like I'm a lot closer to the action.
Right.
And though she didn't use the screens all of the time. Mm-hmm. She used them when it made sense. So it wasn't like you were just watching the screens. Like you, you watched them, sometimes you didn't. Sometimes the screens would be used to project new imagery or music video imagery or whatever. But in addition to all the projection screens, she also used I don't know how I'd even phrase it. Like at one point in the show, I think it was during Hold On, lanterns came out of the ceiling.
Yeah, and they were going up and down really pretty rapidly.
They were
actually
choreographed, mm-hmm. like clearly on some sort of mechanism to choreograph them so that they went along in time to the music. So, you know,
and the idea of the song Hold On is like, you know, there's going to be a light at the end of the tunnel kind of thing. So then it was dark in the beginning of the performance, and then the lanterns like emerged. Everything had like a narrative purpose that she did. I think one of my biggest like pleasant surprises was for Skyfall, which is her James Bond theme song from the 2012 film, Oscar winning, which had just really lovely use of the projector screens. They kind of started by playing the actual opening credits sequence from Skyfall, you know, James Bond sinking into the water and like drowning. I'm not sure if you've seen the film.
I have.
So if you haven't seen the film, that's what happens in the beginning. And but what was really cool is that was the first appearance by a string section in the concert. And all of a sudden, the wall behind her had little compartments, little squares that each had a string player that all of a sudden appeared from the wall, and they played the credits over the strings. You could still see the string players, but it looked like they were submerged in water, and it was just the most beautiful, stunning use of, you know, technology and like the musician reveal, and you know, it felt cinematic. It's a James Bond theme song. You know, it was like everything had a purpose. And I mean, I think this is probably, and I said this in my review too, like this is probably what Adele intended. Like, things weren't perfect maybe in January when she first saw the production. I think she went to great lengths to make them what she considered perfect.
Right.
In what we saw on Friday.
I want to be certain of this.
Mm-hmm.
So in the song, for example, Set Fire to the Rain, at the back,
we gotta talk about that one.
At the back of the stage, there was a wall of string players in little squares.
Yes.
Those were projections, right?
I don't think so.
They were not human beings.
I think that, you know, we'll confirm this because there's two different.
I assume they were video elements.
Well, there's two different ways that they use that wall and with the boxes in it. And I think one was a computer element and one was real. And the reason I think this is because each of the string players looked different. Like, you could look at them and they looked individual. Again, that could have been a video. You could have pretended to, like, you know, make those people look like individuals, and they mm-hmm. weren't. Later on, I'm going to forget what song it was, but there are video projections of, like, what is Adele or a woman kind of hitting the beat of the song against a wall with her fist.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, it's like she's going, like, bump, 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 slap, like that with her hand. That was a video because every one of those women looked identical. It was like obvious that it was just a animation.
I just assumed that the wall of string players were recorded.
I thought they were
elements.
Real, but you know, I've been wrong and I've been naive
before. That would be a lot of money to employ, like, you know, 25 string players for like two songs.
This is a production. It wasn't just two songs though. It was actually more than that. Like, they were there for more than just those two.
I mean, on the stage itself, there was a band of nine people that mm-hmm. includes three backing singers.
Mm-hmm.
I just thought that the people that were in the projection.
We're going to have to ask this question. But I think, and again, I could be wrong, but I think they were real.
Okay.
So we'll see.
So we just sort of, that was a lot of word vomit. So Set Fire to the Rain.
Yeah, we need to talk about that.
Again, many, you know, so many songs were staged with purpose and extravagance, and the title itself lends.
They went literal, guys.
Literal. There's rain.
There's rain and there's fire.
There's fire. You know, things get caught on fire. There's literal, like, fireballs and pyro that shoot into the sky while rain is coming down.
And it was all actual fire and actual water.
On stage.
On stage. And so the way it was set up was, if you haven't seen any videos of this, the band was behind the rain and Adele was in front of the rain.
Right.
And before this one started, they completely closed all the screens at the front.
There was like a transition.
Yeah, there was a full transition because this was not the actual piano that was being played, I hope, because that piano was probably more expensive. But the piano that is actually set on fire is revealed when the screens open. It looks like the same piano.
Yeah, I mean, what you couldn't see, but what I could see.
Oh, yes.
I mean, I don't know. So they do this. They do the transition where the whole stage closes, and Adele does something back there, and you don't realize what's happening, and then the stage reopens again, and in the middle is the piano, the same piano we've seen throughout the first half of the show. We're like, oh, the piano's back. Cool. Maybe she was just doing a costume change. And then you see water start to pour out of the piano, like buckets and buckets and just loads of water just overflowing from the top of the piano onto the floor. What we could see from the top was that there is a big, basically, pond of water that was holding all the water on the stage, like in a big gulf. So between Adele in the front.
A moat, like if a moat, you will.
There was a moat where that's all the water that was pouring out of the piano was pouring into this moat. Behind the moat was the band. And then above the piano in the ceiling was rain falling down onto the moat. So it all had this moat to catch
everything.
Yeah,
I was wondering how they sort of contained that water. So that answers that question. But it still had the effect. I was filming the rain just to show the rain. And then I wanted to show like... I kind of wanted to just show my husband. It wasn't even for like Billboard socials. I wanted to show him like how, oh, this is literal water. This isn't computer. Because when he first looked at the video, he thought it was just computer rain.
Right.
I'm like, no, you need to look in and go zoom in on the piano and see. You can see the water splashing on the ground and streaming down the piano. Like you can see the splashing. It's not a projection. And that's when I noticed that there was a fire that had just started.
You're like, oh.
Like when I zoomed in, I was like, wait, there's a fireball down there, and then that fireball starts to spread across the entire length of the stage and also engulf the piano at the center of the stage.
Yeah, and then there's the big crescendo like towards the end of the song where she really hits the chorus like that, and then that's when like
fireballs,
like eight fireballs all go off at
shooting
once,
shooting up
into the sky behind her, and I'm like,
and you could feel it. I don't know about your seat, Keith, but
no.
I could feel the heat of the flames.
I was too far away for that.
Okay, well, in the 200 section you could feel the flames.
But it, you know, you think, because I was thinking this before we saw the show, I'm like, you know, the Colosseum has an enormous stage that I don't know what the technical capabilities of it are, but, you know, you're thinking, how is the artist that has a residency there going to use and maximize the space?
Right.
And, you know, I don't know if previous residencies have had a moat with water
right.
and fire effects. Maybe they have. Bette Midler did not, I will tell you that. But I don't remember if like Elton did. But that just sort of speaks to kind of, you know, when you think, where is my money going when you see a show like this? Because it's a lot of money. It's like there's a lot of production and musicians. But, you know, at the same time, you're not paying for dancers. You're not paying for like lasers. You're not paying for like her swinging into the audience. You know, maybe she will later. I mean, she does walk through the audience. But you're paying for, I think, when you watch it, you're paying for an incredibly sort of immaculate, classy, detailed, specific, clean, elevated production where everything is very thoughtful, very precise and purposeful and crisp. Nothing seems loose except for Adele being kind of the loose, lovely, chatty, funny Adele that she is, because
right.
so much of seeing her is getting to experience her personality.
Yeah.
Because if she hadn't talked between songs, that would be...
It would have been a beautiful show.
It still would have been great, but I'm like... So, but it's so... Because we all... I think... We, Keith and Katie, but also the average person, thinks Adele is just like a funny, warm individual. You're like, she'd be so much fun to hang out with and have dinner with
and
have a drink of wine.
And
with.
I think we're right.
Yeah.
But I also think that's going to be the piece that makes each show personal. It's going to be because she's going to talk about different things in every show.
And you and the audience may actually get to talk to Adele.
Oh, yeah.
She walks to the audience and talks to the audience.
Please prepare your answers.
Yes.
We were night one, so it's tough. But during or just before she performed when we were young, she came out in the audience and she started asking people about their favorite memories from when they were young. I think the people who go from here on out might be able to think of that ahead of time. It's a hard question when you're like under, you know, you have a gun to your head.
Well, Adele walks up and there's a spotlight on you and a camera focus on you. You're like,
I don't know. What's my name? I don't know anything.
I don't remember anything. What age am I?
But there was, and I mentioned this in my review, like the cutest one was there was a little 12-year-old and she asked this 12-year-old, like, what's your favorite memory from when you were young? He's 12. And he's like, well, probably right here and right now. It was just the cutest, most sincere answer. But then she also walked through the crowd while singing the song and gave people hugs, including like a drag impersonator of herself and her boyfriend, Rich Paul, and her son, Angelo, and just like greeted everyone as she swanned through and perfectly sang the song right up in your face. Just again, the thoughtfulness of like each thing, like I'm going to bring the scope of this thing down a second and just go one on one, person to person through the crowd for this very nostalgic personal song. Right.
Yeah, I will say I could not see the vast majority of the performance.
So there's no camera. There's no big screen that follows her because there's projections of her.
Photos
of her as a kid.
So it was frustrating because all of us in the top are like standing up trying to crane our necks.
Okay, so that's
see.
An interesting perspective. So that's, you could just hear that one basically.
You know, I can hear it. I could see her when she was doing the cue, when she was asking people in the audience, they had a camera and they had the projections
right,
on the screen.
Right, right.
But when she started singing the song, I'm like, where did she go? Mm. All of us were like, where'd she go? Is she going farther back? Is she going to come up here? Where is she going?
Right.
And so,
maybe they should carve out a sliver of the screen for.
Maybe
to
they
follow
should.
Her around.
And, you know, maybe by the time, you know, if you're fortunate enough to get to see this show, which is sold out for its entire run, except they did add two shows for New Year's Eve.
Nothing's ever sold out, but yes, continue.
Well, yeah, nothing's technically ever sold out. You can always buy some incredibly
expensive tickets.
If you're fortunate enough to see this, you know, the show may have changed when you get to see it.
Sure. I'm sure, like, you know, and again, one of the things I mentioned in the one-liner article is that, you know, the one technical difficulty, quote unquote, was her t-shirt gun.
Oh, yeah.
She wanted to shoot out three or four autographed t-shirts along with a $50 bill and a handwritten note to four lucky fans.
In the rafters.
Yeah, she wanted it very badly to get it up to the balconies. It did not work out that way. They imploded even before my seats. Like, they imploded before the aisle that she walked through, basically, for when we were young.
They were all colossal failures. I will tell you that I spoke to someone who saw the show on the second night.
Oh, ooh, intel.
Yeah, and the bazooka worked correctly.
The gun worked
this time.
It got
it up to the top levels.
I wonder if they packed the gun wrong on night one. Well, I mean, it made for a funny moment even then, because then her talking about it failing was sort of hilarious too. She talked about how they'd tried out a bunch of different like t-shirt guns, one of which was like a six-barreled Gatling gun, which she likened to Rambo. So like she wouldn't have talked about that if the gun had worked. So,
right.
You know, delightful.
But all in all, it was probably like one of those sort of optimal, luxurious, over the top, kind of really incredibly memorable evening. So if you're of the fortunate few that will get to see this show,
mm-hmm.
You know, you're going to come out of it thinking this was sort of the optimal like Vegas residency Adele experience.
Yes.
Like you just are. Even if you're in the top level like I were, or if you're much closer like Katie was, it's still going to be probably a very magical evening. And beyond that, just, you know, getting like things that you may be worried or concerned about, like getting into the venue was a breeze. Security was easy. there was lots of beverage options in the lobby.
Merch is readily available.
So many beverages and merchandise things that were incredibly high priced, as is the case for all such things. But
it was amazing.
It was a great evening.
I keep telling people that it exceeded my expectations, and my expectations were high. just knowing what a pro Adele is, knowing how talented she is, I went in expecting a great show and got something better than I ever could have imagined. So that's my review. Put it on a poster.
Put it on a poster.
What else did we see this weekend, Keith? Just then, briefly.
And then on Saturday, after we flew back, I mean, we both, Katie and I, flew to Vegas on Friday.
Separately again.
Separately.
Flew home separately.
We don't live together.
Just in the same metropolis.
Yeah. And then flew back on Saturday morning, and then we reconvened on Saturday evening, where Katie and I went to see Elton John's next to last concert of his final tour at Dodger Stadium. We saw the Saturday show, and then the Sunday show was live streamed on Disney Plus.
Correct. So I guess we got to see him twice, because I definitely watched that whole live stream too.
I watched the whole live stream. I had not seen a concert at Dodger Stadium since Madonna's Sticky and Sweet tour.
Wild.
In 2008 or 9.
And we just had that whole podcast about, like, the artists who can handle playing, you know, a ballpark, and obviously Elton John is on that list.
What's interesting is that I've never seen Elton John live.
Oh, that's also wild.
It is wild. And that's why it was one of those things where I'm like, I need to see Elton John.
Yeah.
But, and if this is my last opportunity, yeah, I really need to do it. So we had nice seats. We were in the loge section off to the side and sort of right field,
I suppose. Yeah, great view of everything.
If you follow us on social media, you would have seen some pictures of what our views look like. So we were off to the side a little bit, but there was lots of screens. Elton, of course, it's a stadium show, so he's going to be a little bit small for the vast majority of the people that are in this venue. But he can keep the attention of an entire stadium, even though he is basically one man at a piano with a backing band.
Yeah, you know, first of all, his voice sounded great, you know, that which, like, honestly is not a given with a 75-year-old man who's been singing professionally for decades. Voice sounded strong. Piano playing, I think, was even more captivating.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, I think that the fact that he's just banging away on the piano, and how, you know, I'm sure they have it down to a science of how they mic his piano, it just sounds so spectacular in that big environment. And that to me is like center stage for every Elton song, is like the piano.
I was kind of surprised at kind of how much they really focused on kind of sort of significant chunks of time where it was just him and the band jamming.
Yep.
Even though it wasn't obviously like improvised, it was very rehearsed. But like, you know, there would be like minutes.
It's not a Grateful Dead show.
No. But like, you know, he at the end of like Saturday Night's All Right for Fightin', like,
which we got to see on Saturday night, guys.
Yes. So it was the best possible Saturday night. But at the end of it, there's like sort of a piano solo that he does, and the camera often focuses an
overhead
shot.
They've got a hand camera.
Oh, like just a hand, like a piano cam.
There was a cute little man in the live stream who talked about that, who said he was a pianist. I'm not sure if you saw this guy. They interviewed him at the crowd. He said, "I play piano. So, like, my favorite part of the show is when the camera goes on Elton's hands, and it's amazing."
Yeah, there's no way he's a piano syncing.
Well, and he's got like a keyboard player, but there's nobody who's playing the piano. That is Elton John.
That part is him.
Yes.
And the band is just amazing.
Yep.
And I mean, so you go into it thinking, oh, I know I'm going to hear probably like these big hit songs, but then there's also these moments throughout the show where, you know, it's maybe a song that you don't totally know. You're like, oh, that song, I've heard of that. But then he sort of amps it up where he maybe does like sort of a long sort of interlude where him and the band kind of extend it a little bit more, where you're really reminded of just how incredible these individuals are as musicians.
Yep.
So all in all, it was a pretty fantastic show. I got to have a Dodger dog and some nachos.
Heck,
I mean, that's great too. I mean, why not?
Let's do it all again next weekend.
Wait, what are we doing next
who's
weekend?
Who's playing Vegas?
Oh.
You're like, no, never mind.
I mean, we got to see, I was like, we didn't see Dua Lipa. We saw her on the live stream.
I have to say, though, I really liked Dua Lipa shot, you know, special videos for Elton to play during Cold Heart for the show, the shows that she was not present at.
Right.
And I actually really liked it because they were videos I'd never seen before. They were not like part of a music video or something.
Right.
So that was compelling, too. No Britney Spears.
No,
I know
Britney
that
Spears.
There was like a lot of chatter. I kind of wanted like a video message from Britney to Elton or something, like just a little
Britney
something.
Twirling on, little something. Britney twirling on video, you know, like waving to Elton. I don't know.
It's twirling while the song's playing, yes.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. It would have been great. But yeah, so it was an exciting weekend. And
to say the least.
All right. Anything else we need to say?
No. I just also, you know, Silvio texted me with a ticket to the American Music Awards on Sunday. And I was like, I can't. First of all, because I'm working. But second of all, like, what a weekend. Let me just cap it off with an award show, too. Just a dumb weekend.
It's like,
I mean, like, dumb, exciting, amazing.
The week before Thanksgiving is always madness.
People are just trying to, like, squeeze it all in before everybody disappears.
You know. All right. Well, now it's time for the chart stat of the week. And we're going to keep it Elton John focused.
Nice.
So, you know, since we just saw him this weekend, Katie, which of the following songs was not a top 10 Hot 100 hit for Elton John? Simple enough question.
We'll see.
Which of these four?
Okay.
Tiny Dancer. Sorry seems to be the hardest word. I guess that's why they call it the blues. Or I don't want to go on with you like that. I also realized I picked three incredibly long song titles.
I think I know the answer to this one. And I see your red herring, and I'm not going to pick it. I think the answer is Tiny Dancer.
You are correct. Tiny Dancer peaked at a lofty number 41.
That's right.
In 1972.
When Hold Me Closer, the, you know, Britney featuring interpolation of Tiny Dancer came out, we were writing a lot about it. And so I was surprised to see that very high number. But in talking with our coworker, Paul, he said, like, basically its legacy has really grown since because of a lot of pop culture moments, you know, Almost Famous and even Friends. Like, there's like there's little Tiny Dancer things all over.
Little tiny dancers just all over the place. Yeah, I mean, Tiny Dancer became a rock radio, adult contemporary sort of staple radio, a staple of adult contemporary radio later on in its life, because I remember it before Almost Famous. But then Almost Famous, the film used the song Tiny Dancer in it in a very prominent way.
Mm-hmm.
That took on a life of its own and resuscitated the track to a certain degree. And then it's also been synced in a million other things. But back then, in 1972, it only got to number 41. Let me rattle off the peak positions for the other songs.
Well, and the one I figured you wanted me to pick was I Don't Want to Go On With You Like That, because I don't know that song. Continue.
I don't want to go on with you like that. Don't want to be a feather in your cap.
He did not play that on Saturday or Sunday, right?
Hmm.
He didn't.
You sure?
I'm pretty sure.
Okay. Well, I Don't Want to Go On With You Like That peaked to number 2 in 1988.
Wow. Yeah. Okay.
It was stuck behind a George Michael song, the name of which I do not remember.
Okay.
I guess that's why they call it the blues, which he did play
on
Saturday and Sunday. It peaked at number 4 in 1984. And Sorry Seems to Be the Hardest Word, which I believe he did sing.
Yes, he did.
Reached number 6 in 1976. Though I like Elton ballads, I like the rockers more.
Same with some exceptions. I mean, like your song.
I mean, I guess for a live concert,
your
I like
song
up-tempo
is
stuff.
Just. I mean, which he does as the second encore song. Like
right.
Your song, I think, is probably my exception to that rule.
Weirdly, Katie and I, when we saw the show, I think we both agree that, and maybe it was just because of how the songs were sequenced in the show. It, to me, felt like I'm Still Standing was, like, bar none, like, the biggest hit he's ever recorded, ever.
It felt like that. It felt like it was the most fun to dance to.
It was, like, such a release. It was like, yes!
I said that to Dan, and he's like, well, duh, that song rules. That's what Dan had to say about I'm Still Standing.
Do you think it's because, but, like... I'm Still Standing came out in like 82, 83.
Right.
So I wasn't really old enough at the time to know the song. I don't think you were even alive.
I was getting born around then.
So like, is it because, like, why is it that song?
I mean, I know it was prominent in like Rocket Man. That's how they kind of ended and they recreated the whole
video,
music video, which is really cool. But I just feel like the song itself just played really well live. I mean, I feel like it didn't necessarily have to do with like how big the song is. It was just fun to sing along to with everybody else.
Yeah.
And Elton's still standing.
I think it's the I don't know why I'm analyzing this so much, because I did think about it. I'm like, why is it? I'm like, is it just because we're coming off a couple ballads and we feel this release of being able to dance? Is it? I think it has this like, da-dun, da-dun, da-dun. It has this like galloping, driving beat to it. And I also think it's because it has a music video and it's from the MTV era.
Yeah.
And it's a video that I distinctly remember from when I was a child. Those songs in the 70s, Saturday Night's All Right for Fightin', Benny and the Jets, they don't have official music videos in the way that we think of videos now. And I think
those I knew from like classic rock radio.
So to me, I'm immediately thinking of like Elton John on the beach with Bruno Tony, what's his name?
Tonioli.
No, Bruno Tonioli.
From Dancing with the Stars.
In his little like bikini on the beach, dance, you know, frolicking around. I immediately think of that because it's
hilarious.
So iconic. And I think that's what probably everyone else in the stadium thought too. They're like, that video, that music video.
I feel like they might not have overthunk it. They might have just
It's just a big hit.
It.
Let's just do it.
It's just a bop.
Okay. We've reached the end of our big show. Any parting words?
Oh, man. I guess not. I was like, oh, I'm not getting back to Vegas for a while, I was thinking. But
No. I will say.
No, it was a great trip, though. It was great. It's totally great.
Katie's lying.
It was amazing.
The best parts, well, for me, the best parts of the Vegas trip, if you've ever been to Vegas, it's kind of. There's a lot. It's Vegas. It's kind of everything that you think it's going to be. And then it could be worse or better. Hanging out with Katie was fabulous.
Always.
Dinner with Katie, amazing. Going to Adele, wonderful. Kind of getting there, staying there, traipsing
around. Oh, like to actual Vegas. I was thinking.
Like the actual Vegas parts.
Can I just say, like, at a point that no one else probably cares about, but that I absolutely did, it was so much simpler to go back to my hotel room and write up this show immediately after, because I didn't have to deal with, you know, driving out of a Dodger Stadium parking lot and the whole slog of, like, getting away from a concert. When you're in Vegas, you just saunter out across the street to your hotel.
Well,
go to your room.
That's
great.
The other thing too. I mean, now I'm sort of dragging this out. But Katie, tell me if you need to go away.
No, I'm fine.
Okay,
I'm great.
I mean, Katie and I full disclosure. Katie and I stayed at the Flamingo Hotel.
Yes,
which is across the street from where Adele played at the Coliseum at Caesar's Palace. Flamingo is across the street from Caesar's.
The convenience factor, 10 out of 10.
Like, it was a 10-minute walk, probably.
Yeah. Or maybe 9 out of 10. Most convenient would have been staying at Caesar's.
Caesar's, yeah. But that was a bit
not
out
happening.
Of our... That was a bit out of our range. Also, Friday night in Vegas, no matter where you stay, it's going to be a bajillion dollars. That kind of convenience doesn't always work where, like, you know, if you've never been to Vegas and you're looking at, like, at a map of all the hotels, you're like, oh, everything is really close to one another.
Close.
No.
They're not.
They're not.
You're like, oh, that's just four casinos down. That's like, imagine, you know, 20 city blocks.
Right. So when and if you go to Vegas, if you've never been there before, it does add a lot if you are trying to think like, oh, we're going to see this show or this show. It probably would benefit you if you tried to stay within walking distance across the street or maybe in the hotel that it's at.
Yeah.
Just for your sanity.
This is why
you're going to be spending at least like $40 in taxis just one direction.
I feel like we're on like a Visit Las Vegas podcast now.
And
it's so convenient.
I was there for less than 24 hours.
Yeah, same.
But it also felt like I was there for an eternity.
That's such a Vegas thing.
I mean, it's Vegas, baby. There's a reason.
I still love Vegas.
Even after this trip?
Yeah.
Okay. I was reminded why I don't like Vegas for this trip. Okay. I'm just going to say
We're no longer on the Visit Las Vegas. No, don't say it.
Don't say it?
No. Don't say it. Don't get into it.
I'll just bring a humidifier next time.
There you go.
The air is too
so dry.
The air is too dry. And it's really smoky. It's smoky.
And lotion. Bring lotion.
Lotion. Well, I didn't have like a
like
dry...
Like a reptile skin.
Oh, dear. Okay. All right. So what song should we go out on?
Oh, my
Viva
God.
Las Vegas? Because it was clearly the Las Vegas Visitors Bureau is going to pick this
right.
one up.
Maybe we should do Leaving Las Vegas. Is that Sheryl Crow?
Yes,
it is. Yeah, I love that song. Let's do it.
Okay. See you guys next time.
Bye.